Voices of Hope is a nonprofit committed to inspiring a sense of community and well-being in hospitals through the donation of athletic jerseys to be worn by patients rooting for their favorite team. In the past 7 years, Jerseys of Hope has given out over 2,000 jerseys to lift the spirits of hospital patients. They have impacted the needy in 4 countries and 11 states. Please visit jerseysofhope.org to learn more. We're so honored to partner with Jerseys of Hope and be a small part of the large impact they make. Welcome to the Unscripted Podcast. This is Caitlin. Each episode, my Uncle Aaron interviews guests that are living their lives unscripted. The song you are hearing is the music from our dear friends, Tori and Shauna. You can find their music wherever you stream your favorite songs. For now, from his studio, here's my Uncle Aaron.
Welcome back to Unscripted from my studios powered by the Jerseys of Hope, Season 3. I can't tell you all how excited I am about this interview today. Andrew, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Andrew Lawler, and I'm a journalist and author. I wrote a book called Under Jerusalem, The Buried History of the World's Most Contested City, and just published a cover story in National Geographic on the Dome of the Rock, which is obviously one of the big landmarks there in the Holy City.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about the Dome of the Rock because I know we're unscripted, but I've done a lot of homework today on the Dome of the Rock.
Well, I will touch you on that then.
Good.
See how well you've done your homework.
Well, brother, I have received a lot of feedback, good, bad, and otherwise. Welcome to 2023, right? Where everybody's got an opinion on something.
Exactly.
But first, we were just talking and I said, hey, stop. I want to click record. So you went to Chapel Hill.
That's correct. I'm a Tar Heel.
You are a Tar Heel. And you just said that your dorm was across from Carmichael and that you like ran into Mike all the time. MJ 23, anybody listening? You like ran into the GOAT all the time. Is that right?
Well, you know, if you want the ugly truth, when I was in the same class as Michael Jordan and I would go to the basketball parties because the basketball parties consisted of a dorm room with a basketball player surrounded by girls, and then another dorm room with a basketball player surrounded by girls. And at either end of the hall, they would have 2 kegs that generally were completely ignored. So I would go with my friends and we got free beer.
Well, all right, you got free beer. We're gonna cleanse ourselves because we're gonna talk about a holy place, which is the under the dome. We'll talk about that in a minute. All right. So it's all good. It's all good. But so you hung around the GOAT, and I'm not going to throw Mike under the bus because someday I hope Mike comes on the podcast. But for now, like, what was it like, man? What was life like in Chapel Hill when Mike was on the court? Did you ever imagine that Mike would be who Mike is today?
Well, yeah, there was a moment, like, you know, when Ralph Sampson was with UVA and was playing, and you know, Jordan's on the team, and you could just see you knew you were watching something historic. And not that I knew that much about basketball or was that detailed of a fan, but everybody knew that we were seeing something that most people would never get to see at the college level. And it was great. It was a really exciting time to watch that team win over and over and over again.
National Geographic has kind of been the standard. Man, since I was in high school, I remember in high school, there was like a shelf in the library for National Geographic magazines, right? Like they were the place you would go about places in the world, right? So let's just start there. How in the world did you get to write for National Geographic?
Well, first of all, you got to remember that half of America's attics used to be filled with issues of National Geographic.
Right.
I mean, at least my grandparents' house was like that. Yeah, I got really lucky. I was a journalist, had been a journalist a long time, and wrote a story. Well, it's a long story, but I ended up scoring my first National Geographic story when I was in Baghdad, and they needed a writer. They had a bunch of photographers taking pictures of the Iraq war, and they had not brought a writer, and I happened to be there. So that was that. And ever since then, I've been doing, you know, occasional stories from Iraq, Afghanistan, the coast of North Carolina, Jerusalem. So I've done a variety of stories, mainly focused on archaeology and history and cultural heritage. That's my real passion.
I'm trying to piece my timeline together. Were you there for the Iraqi war?
That's correct. In 2004. Yeah.
2004. Okay. So, yeah. All right. So,
I was writing at that point about the Iraq Museum and about antiquities in Iraq. Of course, some of the oldest civilizations in the world are in present day Iraq. And I previously visited a few times and knew the archaeologists in Iraq and had visited many of the ancient sites, you know, Babylon and others. And so I got in right after the war began because there was a lot of concern about destruction of ancient sites. And unfortunately, there was a lot of destruction. So that's the story that I did for National Geographic was during the course of the war, the Iraq Museum, of course, was looted under the very noses of the American military. And the chaos that was unleashed really led to a lot of destruction of some of humanity's most important ancient sites. So it was a very tragic time, but it was something that definitely needed to be recorded.
How did you get from UNC to Baghdad?
Well, I got there via outer space. And I'll explain, I was a reporter in Washington covering NASA, actually, for a number of years. And I then went on a fellowship at a university, kind of a mid-career thing, and took a course in archaeology. And I'd always loved archaeology. I grew up in Virginia, lots of history, lots of Civil War sites. And I loved this course. And I learned all about ancient Mesopotamia, today's Iraq. And later the professor said to me, hey, you're a reporter. I'm going to a conference in Baghdad. You want to come? I said, sure. So that launched me into the past two decades of writing about archaeology in the Middle East, primarily other places as well. And that is what landed me ultimately in Jerusalem.
Did you live there?
I lived there off and on. I didn't live there full time. Jerusalem is a very challenging place to live. I could go there for about 3 weeks to a month, and then I had to go home. Mm. It's just an intense place. Hard to get a good night's sleep there is the best way I can put it.
Because of constant shelling? I don't understand because I've never been there.
Jerusalem is actually a very safe place for tourists and pilgrims. Because it's one thing that Jews and Arabs can agree on is that we want the tourists to keep coming. Mm. So it's actually a very safe place, much safer than most American cities. But there is a certain energy about it, not to be too woo-woo, but you know, you do have these many groups who were there vying for control of this ancient place.
Right.
And it can be uncomfortable and complicated and touchy and edgy. So it's not the violence so much as just the fact that there's so much going on there spiritually as well as politically that, like I said, sometimes it's just hard to get a good night's sleep.
Where are you today?
Today, I live in Asheville, North Carolina, which is a much quieter place, I have to say, in all respect.
And I assume you're a freelance writer?
Yeah, I've been freelancing now for, I guess, 10, 15 years. I'm a contributing writer for Science Magazine. I was a staff writer there for decades, and also for Archaeology Magazine, which has been, you know, a great gig, and then also freelance for National Geographic and other publications. But I really have gotten into writing books. I'm loving it. It's just an opportunity to dive very, very deep into a subject, that goes beyond just 3,000 words.
All right. Two last questions, and I promise you we're going to dive into the dome. One, you mentioned books. What books are out there so people can find them?
Sure. Well, if you're interested in chicken and all things chicken, I wrote a book called Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? The Epic Saga of the Bird That Powers Civilization. And that was a lot of fun. It's really a story about how humans spread around the world, because wherever we went, we took the chicken with us. And that was great fun. A lot of archaeology, anthropology, went to cockfights in Bali, you name it. And then my second book is called The Secret Token, Myth, Obsession, and the Search for the Lost Colony of Roanoke. Now, this is one of the great, maybe the first great American mystery, when 117 people vanished off the coast of North Carolina during the time of Queen Elizabeth. It was the first attempt by the English to settle the New World. And it remains a big question, what happened to these people? And so I went off to Eastern North Carolina to explore that question and hung out with a bunch of archaeologists who were trying to solve that mystery. And I won't give it away, but I think we got to the bottom of it.
Where can people find those?
Well, you can go to my website, www.andrewlawler.com, and you just click on whichever book you're interested in, it'll take you to, but it's also available at your local bookstore. So go to your local bookstore, unless you just have to use Amazon, but they are all in print and all available.
Hey everyone, this is Caitlin again. One of the biggest questions we receive is, how do you make money on a podcast? The answer that my uncle gives is, you don't. We set up unscriptedmerch.com to be a warehouse for products and partners to sell merch and spirit items. Each purchase helps this podcast find out more and order some merch at unscriptedmerch.com. Use code UNSCRIPTED20 and receive 20% off all of your orders. Now let's get back to today's episode.
Let's move into why we're on today. The Dome of the Rock. Brother, I have reached out to a friend that lives in Israel. I've reached out to my pastor who's been to Israel multiple times. Man, I can't wait to talk about the Dome of the Rock, because prior to today, I had zero knowledge, and I'm not the brightest guy in the world. So you're probably going to have to educate me. This is a really important place, and you've written an article in National Geographic about it. Can we just talk about the Dome of the Rock?
Yeah, I think you're right. It is one of the most important places in the world. And yet most people, I would say most American, know almost nothing about it, me included. I didn't know much about it at all, which is part of the reason I wanted to do this story, because I did this book, Under Jerusalem, which was all about the archaeology of Jerusalem, particularly biblical Jerusalem. And in the course of doing that, I spent a lot of time walking around seeing this golden dome up on the top of the hill. And I became fascinated by the Temple Mount, what the Muslims call the Haram al-Sharif, or the Noble Sanctuary. You know, it's this enormous rectangular acropolis. It's, I don't know, you could fit maybe a dozen or two dozen football fields there. It's a very large space filled with beautiful buildings, but the real jewel at the center of this important place that has been important for 3,000 years at least is this incredible building, which is really quite mysterious. And I really wanted to know who built it, why did they build it, and why did some people want to blow it up? Mm. There are not many old buildings in the world that you have a whole group of people who would really be excited to tear it down. So, you know, there's a lot of drama in this building, which I wanted to get to the bottom to and to bring it to people so that they can understand. If you understand the Dome of the Rock, you really can understand Jerusalem and the political and religious conflicts in the Middle East. It's really the key that opens the door to understanding what's going on in that part of the world.
No question, because as I did research today, what I found out is there are at least three religious groups that are converging at this one site. Can I say that? Is that right?
Yeah, I would say that there is no place on Earth that is of greater interest to more people on the planet than number one, Jerusalem, and then number two, the Temple Mount or the Noble Sanctuary. And then even more specifically, kind of the bullseye in all of this is the Dome of the Rock.
And there's separate entrances based on your faith. Is that correct?
Yeah. So yes and no. So let's look at the big picture. So you've got Jerusalem, which is a city that is sacred to Muslims, to Christians, and to Jews, and has been for a very, very long time. And then you have the Temple Mount or the Noble Sanctuary, and the Acropolis of this ancient city. Now, that's the site of the ancient Jewish temple. Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. That's the place where, according to the Bible, Solomon built a Jewish temple that was destroyed by the Babylonians, and it was rebuilt. And then Herod the Great, just before the time of Jesus, renovated it, made it even grander. And then the Romans destroyed it in 70 CE. So, you know, just a few decades after the death of Jesus. So that's the story that most of us know, right? So here's this famous place, which had a famous temple that was destroyed. And that was kind of it. That's all I really knew. But what a lot of people, particularly Christians and Jews, don't realize is that that area of the Temple Mount, it stayed basically a ruin. Now, the Romans may have built some temples to their gods. You know, there may have been two or three temples up there for a few centuries. But by the time the Muslims arrive, which is around the 6th century, you know, so 6 centuries after Jesus, you have this new faith comes out of Arabia, and the Muslims arrive, and they find the best real estate in Jerusalem is this ruin. Why is it a ruin? Well, because the Christians saw it as proof that Judaism had failed and that Christianity had triumphed. The temple was destroyed and the Christians wanted to leave the Temple Mount a ruin. Now, the Muslims were shocked by this because they knew the stories about Solomon and David, and they thought, no, this is an important place. So they built the Dome of the Rock to commemorate the place where, in their telling, Muhammad went up to heaven and met all the prophets, including Jesus, and came back down to earth from that spiritual journey with the news of how Muslims were supposed to pray, in what direction. And therefore, this is a really, really important site to Muslims. And of course, it's an important site to Jews who believe this is where the temples were, and to Christians as well, because according to the Gospels, you know, Jesus often was at the temple and worshiped there. So you have these three religions who are all focused on this one place. And the Dome of the Rock was built, you know, 6 centuries after the destruction of the temple, you know, but it's been there for quite a long time now and has been, since then, a place of Muslim worship. It's not a place for Jews to worship or Christians to worship. Christians go to the Holy Sepulchre and Jews go to the Western Wall, or have, you know, for quite a long time. So you do have these divisions. And according to, well, let me back up. So 1967, Israel had a war with the Arab countries around it. And at the end of that war, Israel had gained control of the old city of Jerusalem. It had the western part, but then it gained control of East Jerusalem. That is the part that includes the old city. And so that meant that for the first time, Jews were again in control of the Temple Mount. So what did they do? Well, there was a lot of debate. They decided, we're not going to change anything. Muslims can still worship there. It's a sacred site for Muslims. We're not going to mess with that. We're going to focus Jewish worship on at the Western Wall. They built a big plaza, and that's where a Jewish prayer takes place. But in the past 20 or 30 years, there's been a lot of talk among religious Jews in particular that, hey, that's not fair. We want to have access to the Temple Mount. We want to go up there as well. You can go up there as a tourist. That's fine. But you're forbidden from praying. And that's a directive that comes from Israel, because Israel controls the security on the Temple Mount. So it's basically a way to kind of keep people from getting violent and getting mad at each other. It hasn't always succeeded, but it's what's called the status quo, meaning let's just keep things as they are, because when you change something in Jerusalem, almost inevitably violence erupts. Mm-hmm. So it's one way to try and keep a lid on the tension that you find in that town. Actually, the point is that remarkably, there has been agreement. I mean, we think of Jerusalem as a violent place, but as I mentioned earlier, it actually isn't. You know, the three religions, Judaism and Christianity and Islam, have, sure, they have definitely had their moments of tension, but for the most part, people have found ways to tolerate the fact that there are others that worship differently. And that toleration has taken the form of what I mentioned, the status quo. So really, the idea of Jerusalem is just don't change it. If you change it, then you're going to get violence. If you try and take away somebody's right in order to give somebody else a right, then there's going to be trouble. So basically, that's where Jerusalem is a fascinating place, because politics and religion cannot be separated there. So, you know, if you want to not talk about politics, then we really can't even talk about Jerusalem, because inevitably politics is part of the scene, because politics and religion there are so intertwined. But what I find remarkable is that you have this city where billions of people may disagree with people, you know, Muslims may disagree with Jews, who disagree with Christians, but for the most part, people come together in that city and they worship, and they do it rather peacefully. Now, if you try and change that, then you're asking for trouble. And that's what's happening today, because you have those who are insisting, you know, particularly religious Jews, who want to go up and worship and even destroy the Dome of the Rock, which is, you know, a Muslim sacred building, so that they can rebuild the temple. And, you know, that's a little bit like, I mean, imagine if you were, oh gosh, you know, if you were a Hindu and you showed up and wanted to, you know, blow up the Vatican so you could build a temple. I mean, it's impossible to find an accurate analogy. That's a terrible analogy. But the point is that it would cause a lot of trouble if somebody showed up, no matter what their, how old their claims were, and wanted to destroy a building important to millions and millions of worshipers. And that's what makes the Dome of the Rock more than just a beautiful and ancient building that has been the center of religious worship for 14 centuries, but also the nexus of the whole Middle East problem.
I appreciate you doing a much better job, and that's why you're really, really good at what you do, because that's my point, is for Christians, for the Christian faith alone, that rock, based on my understanding, that rock represents their belief is that that's where Adam was created, possibly. That's what I've read. That's where Abraham almost sacrificed Isaac. And so for the Christian audience listening to this, that's all under this one dome. And I would think for any Christian listening to this, that's kind of important. Like that's a pretty big space for Christians. Now, from other faiths, that's also where, you know, as you've mentioned already, there's other faiths that believe that, and it doesn't mean they're right or wrong. It just means that they have their view as well, that this is a very sacred rock, this piece of real estate that's under this dome is very important to multiple faiths.
Hey everyone, this is Caitlin. Did you know that the Unscripted Podcast is a part of a larger group called the Unscripted Collective? The Unscripted Collective is a team committed to building websites, podcast coaching, and even has a merchandise warehouse for podcasters and organizations. Find out more at myunscripted.com. Reach out today to find out how we can help you in your organization too. Visit myunscripted.com. Now let's go back to today's interview.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any spot on earth that has attracted so many legends as this rock. And so, Muslim and Christian and Jewish legends, you mentioned some of them. Now, you know, are these true? Are these not true? Yeah, this is all a matter of faith, right? We're not talking about anything that can be proved. One can't prove that Adam was created on this spot.
Yeah, who knows?
Or even that there was a Jewish temple at this particular spot, because we don't actually know where the Jewish temple was sited on the Temple Mount. It was probably somewhere in there, but we don't have the archaeology. We don't know. This is a piece of bedrock. I mean, this is a piece of unshaped rock that has been there for virtually ever. And it has, at least in the past 1400 years, it has attracted so many legends, and so many people have, you know, see this as an incredibly sacred space and sacred spot for so many different reasons. And I don't think there's any other place that I can think of on earth that is anything like that. And that's part of what makes this such an amazing site.
Let me give you one and I'll bring it back to, this is going to be really shallow because welcome to my world, but let me give you one. Right next to the Dean Smith Center is the university. I told you it's going to be shallow, but you get this, you understand this. And I guarantee you, most fans of sports will understand this. Right next to the Dean Smith Center is the University of North Carolina Basketball Museum. Yeah. And you go in there and you walk in and you see the rings, right? The championship rings. And there's actually pieces of the floor that Carolina won championships on. And there's a letter. Have you been there, by the way? Let me ask you this.
Have you? I have not, actually. You know, I have not been to the museum. I have not.
All right. One of when I talked to the curator of the museum when we visited, the most important piece in that entire museum, and I'm telling you, it's decorated, man. It's amazing. If you ever get a chance, go back and see it. It's beautiful. It is Mecca for a Carolina fan. But the most important thing sits in this little piece of glass, and it's a letter from Coach K that says, "Hey, Mike, I'm sorry you didn't choose Duke. I wish you best in the future." And I'm paraphrasing, but it's a letter from Coach K wishing Michael Jordan the best, signed. And it's in glass, right? So yeah. I know I'm way off track now, but I don't know.
The way that we endow things with meaning, we endow objects with meaning. And I think that's a great example of the way, you know, legends build up around things.
Yeah. Right. It's the number one thing they go see is they just want to know that Coach K wished Mike best because he chose Carolina over Duke, right? Like, and it's on Duke letterhead. I mean, I'm fascinated. I genuinely mean this. I'm fascinated by the fact that probably most people don't know we have these iconic places that mean something. And I don't know if there's maybe not a more important place in the entire world than this spot, this geographical location that you wrote an article on.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's unique. And you can go up there as a tourist and wander around there all day. You can't go into the Dome of the Rock because after the Second Intifada, after the Palestinian uprising after 2000, there were, you know, the Israelis restricted the Muslims who could go onto the platform, and therefore the Muslims restricted people's tourists' ability to go into the Dome of the Rock. You know, it's a casualty of the politics of the place. It's unfortunate. But I was lucky to get, you know, I was raised Christian, not Muslim, but I was able to get approval, you know, to go in with our photographer to get images and to interview people and just wander around and get a feel for this place. And, you know, it's fascinating because it's not like a church or a mosque. It's not a mosque. It is actually a shrine, but there are no religious rituals per se that happen there. It's this very beautiful place that people come and they sit and they'll read the Quran, but nobody's reading out loud. It's a very quiet place. A lot of women there. Actually, a lot of women go there to pray during the day. And I've really never been to a place like that. It felt very peaceful. Did not feel like an angry, violent place. It felt like a place of refuge. And the physical beauty of the place is so overwhelming. There's so much, you know, beautiful marble and stone and this dome overhead. It really gives you a feeling, no matter what your religious tradition is, of you know, amazing calm. And obviously the builders had that in mind. They built this as a place where you can walk in and sink into whatever kind of meditation or prayer you want and feel comfortable. And that's remarkable. You know, there's nothing there that is overtly even Islamic, you know, or Christian or Jewish. It just has a feeling of sacredness, which seems in some way to transcend, you know, a particular religion. And that's, I think, a very rare thing in the world.
It really is. And I actually, one of the quotes that I read in my study was, "One prayer from this site is worth 500 prayers somewhere else."
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the nature of, you know, some places they just feel more sacred. Right. And there's no doubt that this is one of them. And certainly millions and millions of people, you know, have gone there and agree with that. And, you know, during Crusader times, when the Christians took over Jerusalem, they immediately turned it into a church. They recognize the importance of this place. So it's not just that Muslims have seen it as sacred. Certainly Christians felt the same way.
So I'm going to ask you a couple of quick questions. I've taken a ton of your time today, but you are the best for hopefully educating anybody that listens, like myself. I'm forever changed because of our interview today. Before we even got on, because of the study I did, I didn't didn't even know this place existed. So let me ask you one more question. A pastor friend of mine who's been to Israel many times said that there's some demonic images on the outside. Do you have any feedback on that?
Demonic images? Well, actually, that's kind of funny because, you know, in Islam, there's a big taboo, as in Judaism, on having any images at all. So you actually don't see any images, certainly not of human figures or even demonic figures. The only images that you see are on the interior, the mosaics that were done, you know, way back when, you know, 1500 years ago, practically, are the same kind of things you see in a Byzantine church, except there are no human figures. There's just figures of vegetation or trees, a guard, basically a guard. You know, you're surrounded by these glass mosaics in the interior, which give off a feeling of being in a paradise, which is a Persian word for garden. So no, I don't recall seeing anything that anyone might call demonic, because again, there are no images to be seen of any humans or gods or what have you. And that's part of the power of this place, is that unlike a Byzantine church where you're going to have big crosses and images of Jesus, which might make somebody who's not Christian uncomfortable, the Dome of the Rock doesn't have those things. So it has a very different feel that I think allows anybody to feel comfortable. And there's some research done by this researcher I spent a lot of time with, Beatrice Laurent. She even believes that originally the Dome of the Rock, when it was built by early Muslim rulers, that it was built as a place for all the people of the book being the Quran and the Bible. So that it was built for Christians and Jews, as well as Muslims, as a place for them to come together. That's a controversial idea, but you certainly get the feel in the place that it's not a place that's trying to exclude people when you walk in.
So I promise you, I keep saying I'm going to ask one more question. I attended a Catholic wedding once.
Keep going.
So I'm a Christian, and that's my faith. That's where I was raised. I attended a Catholic wedding once, and I realized quickly the difference between Christianity and Catholicism. And I'm not here to judge or debate either one. I'm just saying I got to see the difference between those. I've never attended something that was Muslim. So what you're saying is this sacred space is very neutral.
It was for me. Now others certainly could have a different experience.
Sure.
But I think going into a place that where if you didn't know anything about this place, you wouldn't necessarily know that it's a Muslim place. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, there are women in hijabs, and you know, and there's some stacks of Qurans here and there. But other than that, the building itself is clearly a celebration of spirit that doesn't in and of itself, you know, demand some kind of particular religious point of view, I guess I can say. Right. Like say walking into a Christian church. And just to add, I mean, my understanding is that Catholicism is Christianity. It's just one sect of Christianity. So right. Baptists, Methodists, Catholics, you know, I think they all consider themselves to be Christian, just to make that point.
Agreed. And I think that's what we've tried to unpack here a bit without stepping on anybody's toes, is the reality is that there's a lot of views in the world. And
yeah,
I appreciate the fact that you've gone there. You've been boots on the ground. You've seen it. There's a Good Morning America video out there where I assume it's your photographer took pictures.
Yeah, that's Zia, who I spent a lot of time with in the Dome,
and they did a story with him, right?
Yeah.
So it's out there. If people are listening to this today, they can find it. All right, so let me move to the final phase. Where can people find your accounting of your experience? I know it's on National Geographic. What's the links?
What are the links?
Yeah, what are the links?
Go to, yeah, probably the best link, because you can get a PDF of the story if you're not a subscriber to National Geographic. is www.andrewlawler, that's andrewlawler.com. And you can find the story as well as information on the book Under Jerusalem, The Buried History of the World's Most Contested City. And the good news is the paperback is coming out on September 26th and will be available then.
So right around the corner. So what is the buried? What's the rest of the story? Not to pull the Paul Harvey, but what's the rest of the story? Well, what else will people find?
Well, we've talked about Jerusalem. We've mainly talked about what's above ground, but what a lot of people may not know is how much is below ground. And when I say below ground, I mean the eras of Jerusalem, particularly biblical Jerusalem, that still exist, just have been keen on unearthing. And it really is the digs, the archaeology digs and treasure hunting digs that have gone on, which have really shaped how we see Jerusalem and why people are so eager to go there. In fact, you know, the Ark of the Covenant, we've all seen how many Hollywood movies about seeking the Ark of the Covenant, right, with Harrison Ford. Well, that story began in Jerusalem in 1911. So I go back and look at some of these explorers who began to unearth what lies beneath the city and how that changed not just our understanding of the past, but how it changed how we see Jerusalem today. So I had a lot of fun going underground with archaeologists and then doing my own digging into the archives about these very crazy, fascinating characters who for the past century have been trying to explore the path of the Holy City.
So we came on today to talk about your article and your books. And I promise you, I want you back on because I have so many more questions for you. We won't even talk basketball or UNC, man, I promise. But I literally—
There might be some Duke fans listening. We don't want to offend them.
No, we don't. I love me some, you know, Duke fans.
Or maybe we do.
We do. Whatever, go Heels. But no, man, I have so many other questions for you. So you've been there, you've done that. What are the links?
Yeah, so you can go to www.andrewlawler.com and just click on the links to find the story, the cover story in the September issue of National Geographic on the Dome of the Rock, as well as more information on Under Jerusalem, The Buried History of the World's Most Contested City, which comes out in paperback on September 26th.
September 26th. Where can they get that on paperback? Is it Amazon and everywhere else?
Yeah, you can go on Amazon, but I also highly recommend calling your local bookstore because these local bookstores are really what power reading and literacy and books. So if you have one nearby, please support them. They'll have it delivered probably as quickly as Amazon can, and you can feel good about supporting a local business.
All right, let me put you on the spot. Will you come back again and talk about what you found in the underground?
Are you kidding? Anytime.
All right, seriously, we got a lot more to talk about. But for today, the Dome of the Rock is incredible. Honestly, as I've researched it, maybe the most important geographical dot on the map is the Dome of the Rock. And man, I appreciate you going there and sharing with us today. And coming on to my little podcast and talking about it.
Well, thank you, Aaron. It's been a pleasure. I've loved chatting with you and sparring with you and reminiscing with you about Chapel Hill.
Absolutely. All right. You're coming back because I want to hear about the underground. I want to hear about that.
With pleasure.
All right, brother. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Unscripted Podcast. Make sure to review and share wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps out our mission to encourage everyone to live life unscripted. Until next time, keep living life unscripted.